103.2 Dublin City FM for the best in all sports coverage, analysis, interviews and reports.
GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM.
With Mick Hanley, Suzanne Parker and Peter Brennigan.
In association with Tipperary Natural Mineral Water. And our thanks to John and the Live Drive team for getting you home safely this evening. And Live Drive returns tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Now, we've got a busy show on GAA Sports Desk this evening. We're going to be speaking to Brian Talty and Conor McKeown about Vincent's victory over Gary Castle in the Leinster Senior Football Championship. And we're going to be speaking to Conor about Croke's defeat to Ballyhale in the hurling equivalent. And we're going to be speaking to Ronan McLaughlin about the Dublin Bus Dubstar hurling team that was named during the week. And Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin is going to be speaking to us about the Dublin Ladies Annual Awards. And we're also going to be hearing from Brendan Cooper about the Minor Camogie Championships, which took place over the weekend. Remember, we'd love to hear from you on the show. You can text us 087-977-1032. You can email us gasportsdesk@dublincityfm.ie, or you can go onto our Facebook page, which is GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM. And of course, at the end of today's show, we're going to have an extensive and revealing interview with Anthony Daly, the former Dublin hurling manager who's just recently launched his autobiography. But it's in Parnell Park on Sunday that we start. And earlier on this evening, I caught up with Herald journalist Conor McKeown. Well, Conor, it wasn't to be for Kilmacock Crokes on Sunday, defeated by Ballyhale Shamrocks by 10 points. But does that tell the story of the whole game?
Probably did. They weren't even remotely as good as they could be themselves, you know, even by their own standards in the Dublin Senior Hurling Championships, which, you know, as we alluded to last week, probably wouldn't have been good enough anyway against Ballyhale. They didn't meet those standards. And so there'll be a bit of regret. You know, they were massive outsiders for the thing, and you know, you looked across the Ballyhale forward line, and you know, you had Jaffa Fitzpatrick, you had Henry Sheffin playing in on the full forward, PJ Reid, arguably the most important Kilkenny forward this year, even Mark Elward in the corner, who has been very good for the Kilkenny under-21s in the last couple of years, and then Michael Fenley playing at centre-back. Like, there was no doubt that this was going to be the hardest game that they'd come across, but I met a few people going into the ground who kind of had the same suspicion as I did, and that was that Croke's, given the fact that they're 3 weeks off leading into the game, the fact that, you know, generally speaking, they don't tend to balk at these sorts of challenges, that it would, that they might make a game of it. And I suppose they probably felt it would only take them so far and that Ballyhale would win. But as it happened, they probably thought it would take them a little bit further than they actually got.
Yeah. And I suppose one man you didn't mention there was Henry Shefflin and his goal early on, I suppose, as you mentioned in your article in the Herald on Monday, it kind of set the tone for the game.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think Shefflin touched the ball 5 or 6 times and he scored 1-3 from play. And that first goal, like a high ball in, he got up ahead of it, Rory O'Carroll, deflected the ball away from Matt Collins. And, you know, when you're taking on that sort of a team, you know, you can tell yourself all week long that, you know, you're good enough to play against them and you're good enough to beat them. But when an early goal goes in and all the stuff that's supposed to happen starts to happen, it's very hard to stop that psychologically for a team. And, you know, even then the second goal was a long free in that fell short from TJ Reid and Matt Collins, who has been very, very good this year for Croke's. In fact, was the outstanding goalkeeper in this year's Dublin Senior Hurling Championship by a mile. Just let the ball go in off his chest and into the net. And, you know, they've worked very, very hard to get themselves kind of, I think they were within 2 at that stage, which, you know, given the fact that they were 4 or 5 down after Shefflin's goal after 5 minutes, you know, an awful lot of their hard work had evaporated then, and from there on in it was just going to be how much, you know, the 2 good goal chances they both felt, that Kellen Conway, both at the end of good moves, and both of them he put almost identically over the bar by about 6 inches. And, you know, maybe if it was Oisin O'Rourke or somebody like that, or even Ryan O'Dwyer, they might have got a goal out of it. So either of them might have given them some sort of flicker of hope, but as it was, you know, once the second goal went in, it was pretty academic from there on in, and pretty disappointing for Croke.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose there's been a lot of work, obviously, in Dublin hurling over the last decade or so, even further back than that, but it started to be reflected in the senior Dublin team. But unfortunately, at club level, it seems like a Dublin team just can't quite make that breakthrough.
Well, it seems to be the boat that the rising tide of Dublin hurling didn't really take with it. You know, if you look at the colleges team, they're extremely competitive. You know, the minor teams, the 21 teams, while they haven't won an All-Ireland, they've been in All-Ireland finals and won Leinster titles. Seniors have won a Leinster title. So it's happening at all levels, but for some reason it's just not happening at club level. And even like Ballyboden, who, you know, by virtue of the fact that they did five in a row and had so many players in Dublin senior hurling panel, you know, you could say they're the best Dublin senior hurling team of recent vintage. You know, they only really got close once to win the Leinster title. I think that was the first year they won in Dublin. I think 2007 when they lost by a point to Bore in the final, and they were an exceptional team. So it's very difficult to see why it's not happening. I think Anthony Daly makes a point in his book that, you know, really, you know, which clubs are providing to the Dublin senior hurling team, and there's only five or six that are providing any significant number. But, you know, you would imagine that that being the case, that the concentration of talent being on those players that are within those clubs, that those clubs would be very competitive in the club hurling championship. But it just hasn't happened, and it's quite inexplicable, I would have thought.
Yeah, and I suppose it is difficult because it's almost, you really need a senior team to nearly win in All-Ireland, and that might get more interest in terms of younger people, because I suppose Dublin football still has that romantic notion of you know, the Dubs and inter-county teams doing well, and I suppose it's about attempting to get younger people into hurling, which it just is proven a bit more difficult, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I just don't know what you're going to do. I think, you know, winning the Dublin senior hurling title is a means and to an end for most of the clubs involved. But I think, you know, Crokes haven't won one 2 years ago. They would have had their ambition set a little bit higher. And Ballyboden certainly did, and they were reeling them off. I remember talking to Liam Hogan one day after they lost to Carrick Shock in a pretty heavy defeat. And he was saying, he was talking about the county final that Bolton had won against Glencairn, and just said, look, it was a terrible game. The standard was terrible. The pitch at Parnell Park was terrible. Everything was terrible about it. And, you know, coming down here to play the likes of Carrick Shock, you know, it's no preparation whatsoever. And, you know, it's a similar conversation I would have had with the manager of the Cork Leash senior footballers a couple of weeks ago. You know, they're reeling off Leash titles to beat the band, but for some reason, when they get into Leinster against a top team, they can't do it. And, you know, I suppose until the Dublin senior hurling championship is really, really competitive, you know, where there's, you know, 6, 7, 8 teams that are playing at a high standard, they can all realistically beat each other and go on to win a senior hurling title, I think Dublin clubs will probably still struggle to win at that level. And it's very strange because the defending Leinster club champions are from Carlow, and the team before that won it are from Offaly. Yeah. The team from Leash have won it within the last 15 years. So it's not as if, you know, Kilkenny's dominance in you know, the Bob O'Keefe and the Leinster senior hurling championship is having a similar effect at club level. It's just not, you know. If you go through it, I think I went through it recently, since the last time a Dublin club won it, since Crumlin in 1980. I think as many Offaly and Wexford clubs have won it, possibly more combined than Kilkenny clubs. So it's a curious one, and probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, one area, I suppose, where Dublin clubs are having success is in the Leinster Football Championship, and of course St Vincent's through to their second consecutive Leinster Club Football Championship final, looking to repeat last year's success. And you mentioned to us a couple of times in the show how you thought that they probably wouldn't have too much of a challenge getting out of this Leinster Championship, but Gary Castle, I suppose, put it up to them, certainly up until 45 minutes thereabouts.
Well, their biggest problem at the weekend was themselves, you know. I mean, they got an early goal. These matches are starting to feel very, very familiar. But you'd imagine one eventually might catch up on Vincent's. Like last year's provincial final was almost a carbon copy, as it turned out, of this year's provincial quarterfinal against Port Leash. You know, they started really well, made it look really easy, waltzed through them, took a goal chance, missed a couple more goal chances, and then for some reason suffered a lapse. And, like, it's, you know, if you're looking at it from a Vincent point of view, yeah, and, you know, it is true that every, you know, in any competitive game, you know, the opposition will always have a period of dominance. But, you know, if you were looking at that game with Vincent 6 or 7 up after scoring 2 goals, Gavin Bourke after missing an easy goal chance, Mossy Quinn probably one more pass away from putting somebody else in for another goal chance. Like, you know, it's not good enough to say, well, they had their period of dominance and got a back level, you know. I mean, you know, they set these high standards of themselves in the way that they play sometimes, but the way that they some of the rest of the time is, you know, quite opposite to it. It's quite opposed. I don't know how they let Gary Castle back into that game.
Yeah.
Gary Castle were going to take the medicine after the second goal went in, but they didn't. And I don't know why it happened to them, because, you know, against Port Leash, they had the exact same problem. And then they finished. I mean, if you start and finish like that, you're still going to, you're going to win 99% of the games. And the problem is, I think, if they have a period like that against a team, like, maybe not Roll, but certainly Cora Finn, or whoever comes through in an All-Ireland final, were they to get that far, I don't think they'll win the game. So it's probably not in a bad position for Tommy Conroy and the senior players in the team that they can hold the last performance up, despite the fact that they actually won quite handsomely in the end, but they can hold it up as a place where they need to improve on, because they do. Like Road, looked, and I haven't seen them, but, you know, just remembering what they were like a couple of years ago when they played Crokes in 2 out of 3, I think, provincial finals. They have a lot of pace. They're very explosive. They're a very, very confident team, and they score a lot of goals. And if Vincent's offer up the same sort of goal chances, it's going to be a much, much more difficult game.
Yeah, indeed. And I think Roald, this is going to be their fourth Leinster final in the last decade or thereabouts. They've lost the previous three, so I suppose they certainly won't be lacking for hunger in it. But, you know, I suppose, as you've said before, it probably won't be enough to quite get them over the line against a team like Vincent's.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. But the only thing about it, at this level, you know, say, you know, you looked at the first day against Port Leash, and really Zach Toohey was going to be the threat up front. You know, Paul Cahalan had his moments, but, you know, a lot of stuff was going through Zach Toohey. At the weekend, Gary Castle had Desi Dolan, who they want to get on the ball as often as possible, and if not, they want to get James Dolan on the ball. But, you know, Rogue will have Niall McNamee and Anton Sullivan and a couple more other players that at that level are very, 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 very effective. Niall Darby as well, and Alan McNamee. Like, you know, they will have more players of a higher standard than Vincent will have faced, even including, say, Port Leash last year in the provincial final. So I think it's going to be a really, really good game. And I think that if Vincent's switch off the same way that they have done in the last couple of matches, that they could well be punished.
Indeed, that game coming up on December 12th. And in keeping our review of the Vincent's victory, earlier on this evening, Mick spoke with Brian Talty.
Well, Brian, last Sunday, St Vincent's coming through their Leinster semi-final clash against Gary Castle. They go on to meet Road of Offaly now on December the 14th. But in many ways, for Vincent's, it'll be a strange game for Tommy Conroy to look back on, because really they had the grips of the game for the first 25 minutes and then just seemed to take off the foot off the pedal and let Gary Castle back into it.
Yeah, well, it shows you, at this level, no matter what, like you can go so many points ahead. I think Ballymun had it in an All Ireland semi final or final at one stage, where they were way ahead in the game, and then the opposition came through. But I think Gary Castle kind of were looking at Vincent's for a lot of the first 25 minutes, and Vincent's played great football. But as you said, they let them back into it. But I'd say Tommy would be delighted with that now, because, you know, going into a final, it'll be something to hold the lads and work on, and the lads will know themselves like that. They left it fairly close at the end, you know, and I suppose the penalty gave them the 5 points, but having said that, if there was a score up the other end, they could have been trouble, you know. But certainly, I'd say Tommy and the lads will be happy to be able to work on that now and have something to work on and to keep the lads more focused in games. And I'd say that's what they're trying to do. Like, for instance, they're playing great football in patches, and then they kind of lose their focus for a while and then come back into it again. But, you know, you have to say the old heads then pushed it on when they needed to push it on Sunday.
True enough, Brian. But I suppose, looking back on it, did Desi Donald Sr. come out with the wrong tactics? Very defensive in the first half. It was only really when they went behind by quite a bit that they let the shackles off them, and Gary Castle then started pushing players forward, and we saw the football that they could play.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I suppose when you're looking at Vincent's and you look at the forward line that they have, you know, you would be inclined to go defensive, you know. But, I think they probably underestimated themselves in a sense as well. You know, as you say, when they started going at Vincent's, they showed how good they are. Like, I mean, Gary Castle were in the All-Ireland final not too long ago, you know, and certainly have a lot of good footballers and a lot of young lads coming through as well, and a lot of fellas who were rated very highly in Westmeath. So they possibly did, and they probably underestimated themselves and overestimated Vincent's. But as I say, when you look at a forward line that's going with Dear McConley and Mossy, and then when you have the two wing forwards playing really well all year as well, so he probably had to go that way to start with. But certainly when they went at Vincent's, they certainly caused them problems. And again, as I say to you, I'd say Tommy and the lads would be delighted with that, you know, that Gary Castle came out and really went for it. And, you know, you're 10 points up in a game and you allow the opposition to come back, it shows up some weaknesses, and it's good to see those in the semi-final. So So I'd say the lads will be delighted with that, and they'll be able to keep the lads a little bit more focused and working a little bit harder in training.
True enough, Brian. Yeah, I suppose four unanswered points before half time, and then 1-3 directly afterwards to level the match. And only for Michael Savage, Gary Castle could have gone into a goal lead.
Well, that's it, you know. And Michael made a great save, but it certainly, you know, Vincent will be sitting down, and the lads themselves will know, like, when you're so far ahead, and you let the opposition come back into the game, and always, you know, the opposition go with the momentum, and you can be in trouble. And as you say, if Michael Savage hadn't made that save, another goal could have caused a lot of problems. But, you know, it was great to see when Vincent was, you know, when they were under pressure, or when they went down, or when they went level, you saw the likes of the Joe Brennans and the Mossies and these guys and Dermot standing up, and, you know, it was Joe Brennan going up and getting that point. It was excellent play, you know. So brought them back into it again, and I suppose winning the penalty settled it all again. But they left it very close, and certainly, you know, there's a lot to be worked on, and it's good to find that out in the semi final. I don't think you'll see Vincent do that in the final. But they are up against it, you know. Watched Forban or watched Road on television, and they have, I'd say, a few more forwards that are up to top level than Gary Castle had, because I thought Gary Castle depended an awful lot on Desi Dolan, you know. But, you know, Rowan seemed to have a few more forwards.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game. But, Brian, just coming back to the point again, Dermot Connolly, I suppose, two magic moments, the layoff to Jer for the point, and Jer kicking it with his right foot as well. A sweet point for him. And then that diagonal ball that he sent in for Mossy just to knock down to Rory Traynor for the penalty as well. Once again, I suppose Dermot showing his class.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I suppose the fact that a lot of people say Dermot was quiet in the game and everything like that, but, you know, these are big moments in the game when you need scores. And not alone does Dermot Connolly score, he's great vision, you know. And even if there's three or four fellas around him, he seems to be able to pick out that good pass. And those are two massive scores, and, you know, set up by Dermot. He didn't get them himself, but they were set up by him. You know, it just shows you the class of the guy.
Brian, you mentioned Rowe there and the forward line they have, and we're coming into December, you know. It's probably, I don't know, crazy time to be playing, you know, Leinster club football finals, but I suppose that's the way the fixtures fall in many ways. But conditions won't be exactly fast, let's say, and it could be a dogged affair.
Yeah, it could be, but I don't think Rowe would be happy with that either, because I think their forwards they look fairly lively to me, you know, and with McNamee and Sullivan in at full forward, they're two very good forwards, and there's another young McPadden, he's only a young fella, but he's an excellent forward as well. They're centre forward, another Sullivan. They're good players, and I'd say they'd like the firm going as well, but, you know, of any team, Road will definitely get stuck into you, and I suppose in those kind of conditions they'd love that. But they have some excellent footballers, you know, and a lot of those that have come up, we think of the older lads there, but there's a lot of young lads that have come through the school system down in Eden Derry and places like that, you know, who have been really good at college's level. So Vincent will have to be on their toes for it, and I think, you know, as I said to you earlier on, the fact that they got that fright in the semi-final is a great thing, and it'll be a plus for the lads in their preparation now for the final.
Indeed, and our thanks to Brian Talty for speaking to us earlier on this evening. Now, the Dubs Stars team was announced earlier on this week in hurling. It was announced in association with, obviously, with the Herald and with Dublin Bus. And earlier on this evening, I caught up with Herald journalist Ronan McLaughlin.
Well, Ronan, the confirmation of the Dublin Bus Herald Dubs Star hurling team this week. Seven awards rather for Kilmacock Crokes players, and obviously as the champions, that's a fair reflection on their season.
Well, yeah, I suppose if you count the two replacements as well, it would add up to nine. They were the best team in this year's championship, probably maybe didn't play their best in the county final against St Jude's, but an awful lot of credit must go to Jude's for how they played that. Like, they brought an intensity to the game that I hadn't really seen now in a while, and it was great to see. And they're certainly an up-and-coming team, but Kilmacud, I thought, were the best team this year. Certainly their performance against Ballyboden in the group stages and in the semi-final were very, very impressive. And I think they're well worth the number of award winners that they received.
Yeah, indeed. And as you mentioned, I suppose it was good to see such a competitive Dublin hurling final. I suppose in the hopes of getting a team from the Dublin Club Championship to succeed in Leinster, I suppose you want a competitive Dublin Championship, and it was competitive throughout, wasn't it?
It was competitive throughout, and, you know, you wouldn't pick holes in the championship in some respects, and I don't want to be seen to be doing that, but there's kind of, Ballyboden has been the benchmark for a long time. They have been very much the best team around, 2012 notwithstanding, when they had a dip in their fortunes, I suppose the first sign that they were perhaps moving on as a team, but they got back on track last year. But yeah, I think possibly an evening out of standards, and it's still an issue that I would have with the county championship, that, you know, you have two group games at the start of the year in April and May, and then you're not back out again till whenever the Dublin senior hurling team are knocked out of the championship, and doesn't allow for any fluency, it doesn't allow for any kind of momentum gathering, I think, as well. It's hard for players and managers to plan for their campaign when they don't really know when they're going to be out again, and that is a difficulty and an issue that is with the championship. And you know, you look at somewhere like Kilkenny, where their championship is played while the intercounty season is in full swing. It doesn't seem to do them any harm. I'm not saying that, you know, they don't have any football to worry about down in Kilkenny, but it's certainly something to look at, because in my own opinion, I feel that players should be playing competitive games just to keep their skills in and keep that competitive instinct in, and it might be something that they'll look at in years to come.
Yeah, indeed, and I suppose, would it be a case of attempting to play the Dublin Championship before the intercounty as well, or maybe holding it all of it off until afterwards, or maybe even reverting to the system why they have in football? I suppose maybe there wouldn't be enough teams in the hurling championship, but it might be something they might look at, maybe.
I would prefer if they just played in the middle of summer, and that the clubs had access to their players. As I said, you will get injuries, but you get injuries in training, you get injuries elsewhere. I think it's a case of, I think the normal club player has probably been done a disservice if you take out, it seems to be not pandering to the elite, but it's certainly focused on the elite players, and there's an awful lot of players that don't fall under that bracket. And I think if you're going to have a competitive championship and you're going to have standards improved, I think the clubs need to have their county stars with them a lot more often than they are, so they can actually influence and be a positive, I suppose, guide to the other players in the club, and standards would rise as a result, I suppose. Some people might consider that quite a simplistic way of looking at things, but I certainly think that the county championship has probably suffered as a result of the access that county teams have on their county players.
And I suppose, looking back at the Dubstars team, I think is it New Year's Day this year? Do they know our club is hosting it this year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's Parnell's have the honour this year. It will be on in Chanel, and they're fantastic grounds there, off the Malahide Road. And the hurling game will throw in it. I think it's either 11:45 or 12:30. That's to be confirmed, and then the football will follow suit at 2:00. And obviously, we would hope that most, or if not all, of the award winners will be able to talk out for the Dubstars. The certainly last year's hurling game was very competitive, and it generally is a competitive game. And given the strength of the Dubstars hurling selection, you'd expect them to give Jerry Cunningham's selection a very, very strong game that day.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose, as we've mentioned before, it's an opportunity to try and put yourself in the shop window, so to speak, of a new management team, and maybe try and get into a Dublin senior panel, or certainly a development team.
Well, put it this way, you'll have Jerry Cunningham and his Shea Boland and Garrett O'Rean and Tommy Dunn there at the match. If you're playing and you've any ambitions now to make the inter-county team, well then a good performance on New Year's Day won't do you any harm, let's put it that way.
Anyway, thanks indeed to Ronan McLaughlin. As you mentioned there, that game this year is taking place on New Year's Day, always a highlight of the Dublin club calendar, and always going to be a great game to go out and watch. Now, over to you, Suzanne.
And Saturday night was the annual awards night for Dublin Ladies Football, and I am delighted to be joined by Nigel McCarthy from We Are Dublin. Nigel, thank you very much for joining me on the programme.
Hi Suzanne, no problem.
It's a big night in the Dublin calendar for the awards night, and there were some very familiar names and some new names winning prizes on the night.
Yes, there was. It was an extremely good night. As you said, it is a big night for Dublin Ladies Football with their annual awards, and yeah, so some of the names would be very familiar to people who follow ladies football. Mm. Sinead Ahern won the Senior Player of the Year award after her fine displays for Dublin this year, where she finished top scorer in the championship. The Senior Player of the Year award went to Lindsay Davey, again, who had a fantastic season with some absolutely stunning displays, and she won Player of the Match in a couple of the games through the championship, and another deserving winner.
Yeah.
When we moved down to the under-21s, Carla Rowe won the Player of the Year award.
Well-deserved, Carla.
Well-deserved, yeah. After being, in my opinion, disgracefully overlooked for in the All-Star Award a few weeks back. She, for me, stood out as the Player of the Year in the country, not just for Dublin.
Yeah.
She was absolutely fantastic, and it was a well-deserved award. And the Under-21 Players Player of the Year was Lucy Collins, again, put in some fantastic displays for Dublin this year. And again, among the players, they felt she was the Player of the Year.
Yeah, fantastic. And the Minor Player of the Year then went to Lauren
went
McGee.
Laura McGee, yeah, again, another player who put in absolutely fantastic displays all through the year for the Minors, and then continued that on with Kilmacud Crokes through the championship. Unfortunately, they just lost out there last week to in the All Ireland Club semi final. But again, another player who well deserved the reward for what she put in this year, and Mirren Niskanen won the Players Player of the Year at minor level. Again, another player. Again, you couldn't argue with the winners of any of the awards. You know, with what they had done this year. You know, on the field.
Yeah, and these players that have been recognised in Dublin, Dublin's year in ladies football has been absolutely incredible. They've had a fantastic year, and it's a great achievement and award for the girls for being chosen as the Dublin players in the annual awards.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a great honour, and you know, it's a great accolade, and it's great for the players for all the effort that they've, you know, effort and sacrifice they've given this year, you know, for Dublin, you know, and every player on that list, you know, was deserving of the award, you know. And look, there was lots of other players who could have been picked as well. You know, there was fantastic displays, but you know, as you say, through all of the grades, it was a really extremely good year for Dublin ladies football this year, and the talent that's coming through, you know, at all the levels is just phenomenal, you know.
And do you think that there's been some players that have been overlooked in this on the senior team and the under-21s that would have deserved to be placed in these awards?
No, I think the right players were picked, if I'm being honest. I've seen all of the grades play this year, and, you know, I've seen probably, if I've missed one match, that would be it. And when I see, you know, I was there on Saturday night myself, and when the names were being read out, you were going, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. There wasn't an argument to give to say, oh, well, somebody else deserved that better.
Yeah.
I think that the right players were picked and deservedly got the award.
Yeah, and just the year so far, they got so close with the All-Ireland finals, but they lost both that and the league.
Yes.
What, looking forward, will this motivate them into next year, and what do you see for 2015 with the players?
Yeah, it definitely will motivate them. You know, Sinead Goldrick said a few words on Saturday night, and you know, she spoke about it the final 10 minutes, and she said, we know what happened there, that won't happen again. I think the players, you know, they're still seeding over it, you know, because they were very, very, very close, and you know, it was that last 10 minutes. We spoke about this before, just the experience Cork have of, you know, grinding out results in All-Ireland finals. They've been there, they've done it, they know how to do it. That was a learning learning curve for Dublin this year.
Yeah.
And I know from listening to the players and listening to what Sinead said, they have taken the lesson, and they're determined that won't happen again if they're in the same position next year, which I think they will be.
Yeah.
I think next year will be probably, it will be as good, but I think it'll actually be a bit better, because I think the senior side will definitely step over the line. I know that there's, you know, there's great talent at under 16, at minor level, you know, the under 21 side, you know, as far as I know, most of those players are still there next year. So, you know, they'll be there. I can't see anybody taking their All-Ireland title off them, which they won this year. And that's not being brassé about it. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, from what I've seen from the other teams, unless they have a massive influx of talent that I haven't seen, that wasn't around this year, I think they will find it very hard at under 21 level to take the All-Ireland off Dublin. And there's, you know, there's one or two up-and-coming teams at senior, but I still think they're a couple of years behind Dublin.
Yeah.
I think Cork, this was probably their last hurrah, and that may sound a little bit strange, you know, what they've done. They've been a fantastic team. You know, you just have to look at all the All-Ireland titles they've won.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't say anything, but they're a fantastic team. But I noticed last year and this year, some of the players are getting to that age where, you know, they've lost a little bit of speed. You know, Dublin had them on the rack big time in the All-Ireland final. And, you know, momentum changed in the game, which happens, and unfortunately Dublin couldn't get it back. But I even listening to the captain of Cork giving the speech, she said she wasn't looking forward to meeting Dublin next year. So, you know, I think everybody can see what's happening with this Dublin team at senior level and at all the other levels.
Yeah.
But I think 2015 is going to be one to really celebrate.
Well, we're looking forward to 2015. Nigel, thank you very much for joining me on the programme.
No problem at all.
Talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye.
And we are indeed looking forward to 2015, and hopefully the Dublin ladies team can put right the wrongs of this season. Now, we're going to take a break here on GAA Sports Desk, but make sure you stay tuned, because after the break, we're going to be speaking to Brendan Cooper, and we're also going to be speaking to Anthony Daly.
Inside Sport, every Tuesday at 7 on 103.2 Dublin City FM, covering Olympic sports, from athletics to boxing, cycling to rugby sevens, we've got it covered. And we'll bring you all the way to Rio and the 2016 Olympic Games. With reports and features and plenty of special guests, Inside Sport with myself, Dave Hooper, here on 103.2 Dublin City FM.
For previews of all the weekend sport in Dublin City, County and beyond, from athletics to basketball, GAA soccer, rugby and pitch and putt and more, join myself, Brendan Conlon, for Friday Sports Desk with the rest of the team on 103.2 Dublin City FM from 7 o'clock.
Artbeat, your weekly half hour devoted to the arts in Dublin. For regular interviews, updates and analysis, join the Artbeat team every Wednesday night at 8pm on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Now also podcasting for free through iTunes.
103.2 Dublin City FM, real radio for Dublin.
And welcome back to GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM in association with Tipperary Natural Mineral Water. Remember, if you want to contact us in studio, you can. The text line is 087-977-1032. The email address is gaasportsdesk@dublincityfm.ie, and our Facebook page is GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM. Now, the minor camogie championships are ongoing in Dublin at the moment, and earlier on this evening, Suzanne caught up with Brendan Cooper to talk about them.
And I am delighted to be joined by the Vice Chairman of Dublin Camogie, Brendan Cooper. Brendan, thank you very much for joining me on the programme.
A pleasure's always, Suzanne.
Now, I've caught you on a very busy evening. Tonight, I think you're in the Red Cow, and there's a press conference on for the new management team of the senior team.
That's right, Suzanne. Tonight we're doing a press conference for the new Dublin management, and as you rightly point out, we're all converging out here in the Red Cow. So you've caught me just before I went into this meeting now at this stage. So it's exciting times for Dublin Camogie, and we're hoping to introduce all the members of the management team to the press there this evening. So good times ahead, Suzanne, by all accounts.
Fantastic. Well, we're still finishing off the 2014 season, and we still have the minor championship in action. And maybe we'll look at the minor A team, and Lucan has qualified in the minor A.
That's right, yeah. Always, before the competition even started, Logan and Jules were probably the forerunners and the favourites to kind of progress to the finals. As you already pointed out, Logan have already qualified for that final. And next Sunday, Jules and Vincent, I think it is, from memory, compete. And should Jules win that, they'll also join Logan Sarasuit. And on balance of form and results today, I think that Jules should be long odds on favourites to beat Vincent this coming weekend.
Great. And in the minor B, there's a game between Nafina and Good Counsel. It's on Thursday.
That's right. This is a back match, Suzanne. The original match was rained off due to bad weather some weeks ago, and this is the only opportunity we've had to restage this particular match. We're going down to Altibourne Park. It's all weather pitch, so probably not the best, but better than no pitch at all, Suzanne. So if Nafina win tonight, they'll probably qualify for a semi-final spot, but a lot to be decided in the in minor B just yet.
Yeah, and the teams that are now after qualifying in the minor B, it's Ballinteer St John and Fáin Celtic.
That's right. Though we have three groups in that in the B section, Suzanne, and today both those teams have won their two qualifying matches, so they're automatically straight through to the semi-final, and all that remains to be seen is if the Phoenix can beat Good Counsel this evening, they'll be the third people to join them. If not, we have to have another match come the weekend, but it's a work in progress, Suzanne.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way.
And in the minor C, there's a game with Raheny and Castleknock on Sunday.
Again, that's probably even further behind schedule. They were very badly hit down the first couple of rounds. We probably, one of those teams only has played one match as opposed to two matches. So they're playing a little bit of catch up now at the moment. So from that group, you could have Lucan, Castleknock, or Raheny. It's basically any two from three of that group can go through to the semi final stage, Suzanne.
And it's Kilmacud Crokes that have already qualified in the minor C.
That's right. Again, along with, there's another group, Akul as well. They've also qualified there. Now they had the match there on Tuesday evening, which they won. And so that's a lot easier to decide. That's Crokes and Cooler will be in the semi-final, and any two or three, as I just mentioned, from the other group. So long season, Suzanne, and we're still trying to work away towards the end. Slow but sure.
Well, before I let you get back to the press conference, there is trials happening for the Dublin and the Premier Junior Senior team.
Yeah, very exciting time, Suzanne. We're at DCU next Monday evening, where the new management team have called open trials. So we have DCU up there between 6 and 8, and we're expecting a large crowd out there, and hopefully, you know, a lot of the girls that maybe haven't played with Dublin in the last few years will be coming back out to throw their name into the hat this time round. So
Brilliant.
We're expecting a good crowd out there now, that's for sure.
That's great. Brendan, thank you very much for joining me, and I'll speak to you again next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Suzanne. Talk to you then. Bye. Bye-bye.
And indeed our thanks to Brendan Cooper, the Vice Chairman of Dublin Camogie. Now, Anthony Daly's reign as Dublin Senior Hurling Manager was impressive as he got them their first National Hurling League and first Leinster title even in 5 decades. And he's launching his autobiography at the moment. And earlier on this evening, Mick caught up with him for a chat.
Many, many congratulations on your new autobiography. I suppose after finishing up managing Dublin, it was probably a right time for the release of it.
Yeah, Mick, it was something we've been working on there, myself and Christy O'Connor, for a couple of years, really, tell you the truth. And we'd most of the back broken on the book, I suppose, but it was just as just to get the timing right, I suppose. And possibly could have had it ready for last Christmas, but I guess we knew for sure I was staying on with the Dubs after last year, and this year probably knew for sure in the back of my head that I was going. So, yeah, it was the right time, I suppose, to run with it when we were going doing it anyway.
And I'm sure you're very, very busy travelling around the country anyway, promoting the book, but do you miss the management?
Yeah, look, since we've been beaten, we had a good bit of work to do, make with it, to finish it, you know. So I've been kept busy with that. As I said, we're working with Christy, and then there's a lot of work to be done with the photograph section. You kind of have to do that yourself, you know, because you really, it's a personal sort of choice thing, and put in whatever, you know, you want to put in. And so, yeah, well, at time, you know, I've had an hour chat for an hour with Ger Cunningham, and you know, I think Dublin have made a great appointment in Ger, and the group that he's brought with him, with Tommy staying on and with Shane Garrod coming in. I think it's a great mix, and I'd be looking forward to following them in the new year and following Claire as well, I suppose. But no, yeah, when you're at something like that for 6 years, it becomes sort of routine for you, and you know, very similar to a job, I suppose, really, where you plan your week around it, and you plan your time around it, and your other work you have to do with it, and including the video work, and you know, dealing with players on a one-to-one basis. So yeah, look, there's some parts you'll miss, and there's other parts you won't miss. But overall, yeah, you would miss it. It's a very exciting thing to be involved in as intercounty at the highest level. You know, I'd be looking forward to Division 1A to be getting ready for it. And in some ways, yeah, it'd be killing me not to be involved. But what can you do? You just, you know, you can't stay at it forever. It's time for a change. And I think everybody in Dublin hurling will be well served by a change at this stage.
And as you mentioned there, it's like a job in many ways, and intercounty management has gone that way, and even club management seems to have gone that way as well.
Yeah, like there's huge development, obviously, we all know, with technology and with the expertise that's available now. I mean, the amount of sports scientists that are out there now, you know, with massive experience from all different codes, and they bring that to the equation. I mean, I wouldn't have much of that, except what I'd be have learned off those guys myself. But yeah, look, it very much when you're a player, even though they give massive commitment now, way more than we were ever asked to give, like, in fairness to them. But you still really only have to get yourself right, and if you can help out with other lads along the way, mighty fair play to you, but you have to get yourself right. I suppose with management, you have to get the team around you right first, which is your kind of your mentors and your backroom staff, and also then you have to try and think of every one of the 35 or 6 guys that are on the panel, and possibly you'll be starting off maybe with 45 or 6 and have to let go 9 or 10 guys, which I always found the very hardest part of that, you know, because at least if a fella doesn't make the 15 or he doesn't make the 26, he still has a chance to bounce back as the year goes on. But when you're dropping a lead, you know, when the panel is being cut back to your league panel, let's say, I always found that the most difficult thing, because there's really not too many ways back for him, unless he's a very young player in that season. So that, because that's, one of the parts I won't be missing.
I suppose the winter as well coming in, and with the season, I know it's still going on with club championships taking place, but normally the inter-county season starts with the Dub Stars on New Year's Day, I think, this year, and it's always a cold, miserable day, and certainly January and February training must be tough.
Yeah, that's tough going, and I'm going to enjoy New Year's Eve this year, Mick. I'm not due back in the pub until late February. If I'm going back, I don't know whether Declan wants to keep going there or not, and we'll see what happens. But Jim Gavin, fair play to him, put it on last year on New Year's Eve evening. So it was fairly late when we got back to Clare. And, yeah. But no, look, once New Year's Day comes in, I think the Blue Star is a good signal for the lads that they really have to knuckle down. I know they're back doing gym work and all that at the moment, and fitness assessments and all that. So the feedback from the few lads I've been talking to, or just a few texts with, her, they're happy and they're enjoying it, and it's new and it's fresh, and that's always, you know, a break is as good, a change is as good as a break, they say. So I suppose that's the thing, it's a change and a fresh voice, and one person I'd admire an awful lot in the hurling scene, and would be fairly friendly with him over the years, and had many good battles with him, but he was too far away from me now as a player, but we had a few good muscles on the sideline. But I know, I think it's a great choice for Dublin, and with one eye on the future as well, with bringing the lads along with him, I think it's very positive.
Now, you travelled far and wide with Dublin, from Kilrush, from your home, and of course up to Dublin quite a lot. But now you're travelling, as I said earlier on, far and wide, promoting the book. When did the idea first come about, or was it Christy that came to you, or did you decide yourself that you wanted to put this together?
Well, I tell you, I suppose with the Clare thing, there was a bit of fascination always, Mick, and I first met a different publisher back in 2001, and had a bit of lunch with them, and a sort of a free lunch.
Always the best.
Yeah, because I never wound up signing the contract. I felt there was, you know, a lot more stuff that maybe it wasn't the right time to do it, and wound up not doing it. And just another, a different publisher, Transworld, came to me on McHugh there, down in Leeson Street there, you know, picked up the phone and just said, look, we have an idea. Would you be willing to meet us? And one thing led to another. I suppose that was back probably late 2012, you know, so I'd need a ghostwriter. I admire Paul Galvin for what he'd done. I mean, it was massive. But while you're trying to manage Dublin, you couldn't be writing a book, to be honest with you, with the driving and everything, and unless you're the right good dictaphone. But you'd probably go mad, I'd say. And I suppose Paul had the year to sit down and really have a go at it, and he did a great job as well. I've read his book, and it's fascinating reading. He's a fascinating guy. But I would have needed somebody with me, and it was fierce handy as well for us as well that Christy was goalkeeping coach with Dublin, you know, so for the last 2 seasons, and would have been up and down with me in the car quite a bit. He wouldn't be coming every night now, but he'd be coming once a fortnight at least to train Gary and Alan and Stephen this year. And so we were able to do a good bit of the work, mostly on the way home, because if you were trying to do it on the way up, you'd be nearly drained by the time you came up. But it was, you know, it eased the burden a bit, but we'd still often be outside Christie's house at 1:45 in the morning, doing bits and pieces on it, it was kind of ready to go. I suppose we possibly with a push could have got it out for last Christmas, and many people would have said that would have been the time to do it after winning Leinster and being promoted back into Division 1A, but you know, in some ways, I suppose stories are a bit like life. It doesn't always turn out to be the fairy tale ending running off with the Liam McCarthy Cup, and I was lucky to get away with doing that twice as a player. And you know, we had great times at Dublin in the 6 years and a few sad days as well. But you know, if you look at that, I suppose it makes it more realistic for people as well, that it doesn't wind up with the happy ending. We got well beaten in Thurles, and you know, that's near the end of the book, and it's kind of sad finish up, but sure, that's life at times.
Of course, the triumphs with Clare, it is fairy tale in many ways, because you were there as captain back in 95 and then recaptured the Liam McCarthy Cup in 97 as well. And I suppose for many, many years, Anthony, Clare struggled not only to win Munster titles, but to win an All-Ireland.
Oh, yeah, sure, look, Mick, tell you the truth, All-Irelands were the farthest things from our minds, you know, when we were trying to get up the ladder a bit with Lynn Gaynor, I guess. Lynn would have done four great years with us, and we beat Tip, Cork and Limerick in Lynn's time in Championship, but we seemed to flop on the big days for whatever reason, and you know, probably more of a mental thing, but I suppose Ger brought that extra bit of steel, and for us the massive breakthrough was winning Munster in 95, and that gave us a new great sense of new belief in ourselves, and I think very similar to the Dubs last year. I think we were very, very unlucky not to kick on and go the whole way, like once we had made the breakthrough in Leinster, and very hard to put your finger on where it all went wrong this year. But in Clare it was all about the dream, was winning. We hadn't won Munster since 32, like, so I mean, I thought there was 13, I think, Munster finals lost in the preceding time up to 95, so that was the real dream. And just I think we played with freedom and abandon after that. As I said, a bit like I thought Dublin did last year against Cork, I thought it was a magnificent game, and hinged on maybe a couple of, you know, things that went on during the game, and just a pity we didn't have the bit of luck with us on the day. We could have got that final, and you'd never know what would have happened, ironically, against Clare, as it turned out, but sure, we'd have taken our chances if that was the case.
True enough. 95 obviously was the pinnacle as a player, or would you say 97 was even better coming back, having been beaten in 96?
Yeah, well, in terms of the All-Irelands, I'd say 97 was sweeter, not just because, you know, we beat Tip twice, but we also beat Kilkenny and Cork that year. And I mean, to beat the golden triangle, I suppose, to win that All-Ireland was very satisfying. And I suppose Ger did put up to us that the big test of a team was, you know, that good teams win one, that great teams win a second one. And look, I'd have taken one gladly when I was about 22 or 3. But, you know, it was very satisfying because he really put a lot of pressure on us. That not pressure on us, but just really shoved it up to us to show that we were good enough to win a second one. And a lot of people would say we were a bit unlucky not to get another one out of it, maybe with a bit of trouble with timekeeping and stuff like that.
True enough, yeah.
Years, you know.
Yeah.
So, look, if you told me I'd have got two and 3 Munsters, Mick, I'd have taken the hand off you. I said, as a fella coming out of under 21 and minor into a Clare panel there, that was devoid of any belief. And you know, we just never saw ourselves as getting up there. And just slowly but surely, you know, I suppose a few of us had a bit of ambition. And then this younger brigade of the likes of the Lohans and the McMahons and the Jamesies came along and added to them by Ollie Bakers and Shawnee McMahons and fellas like that, Colin Lynch's. And, you know, so just a very ambitious group came together and they drove it on along with a great management team, to be fair to the guys, you know.
And Anthony, for yourself then, you went on to manage your native county, Clare. Was there pressure? Was there a lot of pressure doing that?
No, it was probably a mad decision we make in hindsight. I say it straight out in the book, like, why and why not? I mean, I was just after winning the county final with Clarecastle, and I just announced that I wasn't going to play anymore. I just felt my legs were gone, and we'd been beaten by Patrick Swell, and the next thing I had four or five of the old comrades, I suppose, into me in the shop, and They just asked me would I consider taking over, that they felt there was another kick in them, and that they'd been beaten in the 2002 final under Cyril, and, you know, very great run that year to get to the final, beaten by Kilkenny, but they felt that maybe there might have been another kick in if I took over. And I suppose, look, just with a bit of advice from a few people, I was only 33, I think, I'm just gone on 34, I decided I'd have a cuss for a year and wound up in it for 3 years, because I suppose first year was a bit of a disaster in the first round against Waterford. We flopped completely and came back and beaten by Kilkenny in a replay, and then desperately unlucky then in 2005, you know, ahead of Cork 5 points with 13 or 14 minutes to go, and, you know, a great Cork team, to be fair, reeled us back in, and we lost it by a point in injury time, and I suppose the pressure from all of ourselves, you know, within the management and the senior players, I guess, was to have one more cut in 206. And again, got back to the semi-final and were only losing by 2 points to Kilkenny, and they rattled off 1-3 as only they could do in the last 2 or 3 minutes, and the scoreboard made it look one side or the other, where it was a great game really that day. Anyone that looks back at it will see for themselves like this. But I knew at that stage that, you know, fellas like Brian and Shawnee were moving on, and I felt, you know, if I stayed going and things kind of didn't get any better for us, that I'd be finished maybe at management level. So I wanted to move away from it then for a while, and just, I suppose, get the appetite back. And the Dublin thing just came along a couple of years later, and you know, I jumped at it really, because it was just you know, exciting to be back at that level. And I knew that Dublin had fantastic work done, right from the Friends of Dublin Hurling to all the development squads and all the clubs that were really pushing hurling and trying to get Dublin on the map. And it was a very exciting time to be coming in, you know, taking on young lads like Liam Rush and David Tracy and, you know, fellas like that at a young age, Paul Shute, fellas like that, and Peter Kelly. And then, you know, the older lads who had served for ages and were great servants to me. So it's just a bit of a natural step. I felt I'd learned a lot in Clare, and wanted when the chance came up, wanted to have a go at it, and went for it. And sure, look, it's over now, but enjoyed every bit of it, even though there was a few painful days along the way. But overall, looking back at the 6 years, Mick, I would have loved every moment of it.
Many parallels between, I suppose, Clare and Dublin. Your hurling career as a player, having waited 32 years for a Munster title, and similarly for Dublin, it was a long, long time since Dublin won a Leinster title. I know from my own personal view, Anthony, I never thought I'd see Dublin winning a Leinster title before I died, and I was hoping it would happen, and thankfully it did happen in your time. But great days, as you said. The semi-final, a bit unfortunate, the hop of the ball here, a few decisions there. It could have been an All-Ireland final, and many similars to maybe Dublin footballers back in 74 when they made a breakthrough after so many years and might have pushed Dublin on a little bit more.
Yeah, that's the big hope now. Probably I won't be involved again, but, you know, like, I'd hate now to see with Dublin kind of settling for slipping back down the pecking order. I mean, I think being in 1A is hugely important now for the progression, and I know that from the initial panel that's gone in, like, that Ger and the lads have certainly decided to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and there's very good players there, and just because your birth cert says something, it doesn't mean you're not good enough. I mean, a new management coming in making 7 and 8 changes is madness. Like, really, I mean, that just doesn't happen. And you have to blood a few new lads, and I'm sure the boys will be looking to do that, and there is good young talent there. But you have to blend them in as well. I think you just can't throw a pile of young lads in at the deep end. And I suppose Clare, after my time, suffered a bit with that. They just maybe threw in... No, eventually it paid off then last year, I suppose, but with a few painful years in between and a few hidings along the way. And so I think, look, no, I think that it was great to bridge the gap from the minute 61. I used to hit a tip in them every time I passed up the corridor there in Parnell when we were training, just to say, lads, we're going to get there someday, you know. So it was great to get there, Mick, and it was an absolute honour to be in charge of that bunch of boys. They gave everything for the cause, for Dublin, and never any problems with them, you know, great lads, discipline-wise. And always have your moments, of course, when you're with a team for 6 years, you have a few moments you're not happy, and they're not happy with you either a few times. So no, it was an odyssey and great. Just a pity we couldn't go the whole way, I suppose. That's the little regret at the end of it. But sure, look, as I said, it doesn't always finish up in the fairy tale end and either the story. And should there be more stories, but help of God, we're not dead yet anyway.
There might be another book, yes.
None of the two of us, Mick. The two of us are still breathing.
I'm sure you have ambitions eventually to continue on in management.
Look, Mick, as long as I'm fit enough and the old hips stay going with me. And, I love the smell of dressing rooms, tell you the truth. And I just, look, at the next best thing to playing was being involved as a mentor. And even as far back as 95, myself and the Sparrow were training the Clarecastle Miners to win the Clare Minor Championship, you know. That we'd have been fanatics that way, like, all our lives, and to be bred into us to be that. And so that won't change, you know, whether it is whatever with a club or whatever. I'd be stuck in something anyway. I'd say, you know, maybe take a little bit of time now, all right, to see way up my options, and maybe take a small breather for the family as well, you know. So But no, I'm sure I'd be back in some part of hurling anyway before too long, I'd imagine anyway, whether that's with the Clarecastle under 12s or wherever it is, you know. That's just be the nature of the beast.
And our thanks indeed to Anthony Daly. We had to cut the interview a little bit short there, but our thanks to him. He's obviously one of the great characters of modern hurling, and I imagine it's a really great. I haven't had a chance to see it myself, but anyone I've talked to has had a look at it. It says it's a really, really good book. Well worth reading, and you can get it obviously in any decent bookshop around the city centre here. And I imagine it's going to be a popular one for Christmas. And the record he had with Dublin was really fantastic, winning that Leinster title, first one since 1961, and winning the first league. The amazing sight of Dublin hurlers absolutely destroying Kilkenny in a national final in Croke Park was something I suppose I thought I'd see, but I didn't think I'd see quite so early. And that was a really great day when they won that league title, and hopefully Jerry Cunningham can continue that level of success and maybe even go to the next level in the future. Now earlier on this evening we were talking about the Dublin Bus Herald Dubstars hurling selection that was called up for this year, and I've had a couple of texts in looking to see what the team is, so I'm just going to quickly go through it here. In goals is Maddie Collins of Kilmacur Crokes. The right cornerback is Jerry McManus of St Jude's. Fullback Rory O'Carroll, who seems to have no limit to his talents, whether it be hurling or football, obviously a Crokes man. And in left cornerback it's Kieran Maguire of St Jude's. The right halfback, Keane McGowan of Crokes, Jack Dugan of Crokes, and then Shane Durkin of Ballyboden make up the halfback line. At midfield, Dylan Mulligan of Kilmacur Crokes and Andrew Morris of O'Toole's. And the right half forward is Connor Carton of O'Toole's, Danny Sutcliffe of St Jude's, and Ross O'Carroll of Kilmacud Crokes. And the full forward line, Fionn Oireen Breen of St Jude's, Shawnee McGrath of Kilmacud Crokes, who was obviously absolutely huge in making sure that Crokes got as far as they did in both Dublin and in Leinster. And at left corner forward, St Pat's of Palmerston sole representative Shane Stapleton. So as Ronan McLaughlin of the Herald mentioned earlier on, that game is going to be coming up on New Year's Day, and it's a great occasion usually in Dublin GA to go out, and I believe this year it's on in the Parnells Club, so a great occasion that will be had for everyone who goes out to that game. But I'm afraid that is all we have time for on GA Sports Desk this evening. And remember, the sport continues tomorrow. It's The Sporting Choice with Keane O'Callaghan at 7 o'clock, and stay tuned this evening because Artbeat is coming up, and I actually have Kira Murphy in studio to tell me what's coming up on Artbeat.
Yeah, we've got a great show lined up tonight, Peter. I'm going to be chatting to Aoife O'Connell from the lab on Foley Street about their upcoming exhibition, The Grand Scheme, and Des is going to be chatting to Claudia Boyle, Irish opera singer.
Indeed, so stay tuned for Des and Kira coming up between 8 and half 8 for Artbeat. But from everyone on the GAA Sports Desk team, Mick Hanley, Suzanne Parker, Katie Scannon on sound, and myself, Peter Brannigan, have a great evening.